This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Welcome back to the only dedicated DC Comics podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. I am Russell.
I'm Todd.
And this is DC for you.
For you?
For you, for us, for everyone.
For me?
Yeah, for you too, Todd. Okay. I mean, you've been a bigger DC fan than I think I will ever be.
Well, I suppose that might be true if we're going by length of time. But then again, I've been a bigger fan of things like reading the newspaper and watching television shows than everybody else, if we're going by that metric.
Well, I will say that you are our old, and I will claim that. So, but this second episode that we're going to get into is going to be all about something that I know really not much about, honestly, because I wasn't even born whenever it was a thing, and that was the 1980 New Teen Titans run from Marv Wolfman and George Perez. So that is something that I know you are a huge fan of.
Yes, it's one of my all-time favorites. I'd say top 10 of my favorite runs of all time, even though I may acknowledge it's maybe historically more important than that. I've read a lot of comics and I have a lot of favorite things, but this is certainly up there. It's one of those things I read when I was about 12 years old or so, and I read through it till its conclusion, until Perez had left the book, and eventually this title and all its various incarnations came to a close, and then they rebooted it years later. But yeah, Titans is something that's part of my own lifeblood, I would say.
Yeah, you've been a huge Titans fan for as long as I've known you. You were talking up New Teen Titans as being like one of the quintessential, and I'd always heard that it was like one of the quintessential runs of all time, something that any like DC fan, any comics fan really should check out at some point. In prep for this episode, we were going to talk about DC Comics Presents number 26, which introduced the concept of the New Teen Titans in a little preview chapter, and then the New Teen Titans issue 1 that was released about, I think, a week later. So getting into that, I know you – were you reading DC Comics Presents whenever this preview was a thing?
No, you know, I was not, and I didn't necessarily get into Teen Titans until about the 23-24 issue mark, after they'd been going for a couple of years. And then I had known, because of books like Who's Who in the DC Universe, you'd look up the Cyborg entry and it'd say first appearance. Well, that wasn't in New Teen Titans number 1. It was actually in DC Comics Presents number 26 in 1980. So I never had read this story until there was a reprint issue in the regular New Teen Titans comic book. And after a while, after about 5 years, they split into two comic books, and we'll talk about that. But in the newsstand version, there was a version that was newsstand only. They did a reprint of DC Comics Presents number 26, and then that same issue had a backup title that was seen only in a digest comic, which are the little tiny comics you'd get. You see a lot of Archie digests out there, but you'd get these digest comics at the supermarket. And there was a Teen Titans issue, New Teen Titans issue, drawn by Carmine Infantino. So I remember that, which is kind of jarring. Anytime Perez did not draw this original team, it was kind of jarring to me. But I digress. This DC Comics Presents 26, I finally got a chance to read it after Titans had been out for about 6 or 7 years, and Okay, that would make me want to read New Teen Titans number one. But why wouldn't you want to read it? Because it's freaking George Perez doing the art and these great characters and this great story.
I got to agree with that because I was, like I said at the beginning, I have not read any of this run. I didn't know really much about it other than it being so like lauded by you and like, by many other fans across the internet. So my first reading of any of this was that special preview in DC Comics Presents 26 that is on the DC Universe streaming app. So along with, I think, pretty much the entire run of Wolfman and Perez New Teen Titans. So as I got into that that first story, I thought it was pretty brilliant in the way that Wolfman structured it as a kind of non-linear storytelling. And as jarring as it kind of was to begin with, I got really into the pacing of it because it it reminded me a lot of the Star Trek The Next Generation series finale when Captain Picard is jumping from one era to another.
All good things, but, yeah.
Yes, all good things, fighting enemy.
Great analogy, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of that so much, and I was like, okay, I am totally with this because that's like one of my absolute favorite episodes of television. And it gives you, like you were saying, it's the first appearance of Cyborg, but it's also the first appearance of Starfire. And I believe it's also the first appearance of Raven.
It is. I mean, that's huge. We're talking a 40-year-old comic, and just think of all the different appearances of Cyborg since then. Movies, TV was on Smallville, was on the Doom Patrol, was in the Justice League movie. Was, you know, this, he was even on Super Friends. I mean, Cyborg's been around since 85 in various places other than comics. And then we have Raven and Starfire, too. Cosplay favorites, Raven and Starfire, two of the most cosplayed characters you'll see out there. Just think about one comic introducing three characters. And in a post-Neil Adams world where creators actually get royalties. So this is one of the reasons George Perez gets to retire is because of DC Comics Presents 26 and New Teen Titans number one, because DC has paid him royalties on these, and these characters have been used in cartoons and motion pictures.
Yeah, it's nuts just how much is in, like, how historic a moment the that little preview in DC Comics Presents 26 was, introducing like three major players to the DC canon that are still major players today. And I will say that I was really surprised at how into this issue that I got, because usually if an issue like this were to drop and it's, you know, throwing a whole bunch of new characters at me and also doing this like bouncing back and forth in time with a character that I wouldn't necessarily think about that for, and in this case it being Dick Grayson, still dressed in that unfortunate Robin costume. I didn't think this was going to hook me, but I think it's just on the pure strength of Wolfman's pacing and like how distinct he makes each character, and of course the just gorgeous George Perez art, which still looks like modern comics to me. Like it doesn't look like it's aged a day.
Yeah, I agree. Perez, as most people know, is one of my all-time favorite artists, if not my all-time favorite artist. He was, I would say, the first artist I noticed on the spinner rack at the local Circle K / 7-Eleven. I would see George Perez covers for things like this and the Little Tales of the Titans mini series he did with the origins of the four of the Teen Titans. And just every time Perez did a comic, I noticed the art popped a little bit more, and there was an amazing attention to detail, as Perez is known for, and we talked about on our Crisis on Infinite Earths episode.
Yes.
So, yeah, Perez, I like to refer to Perez hair, like George Perez draws hair like no other artist has ever drawn hair, among other things. But I talk about the hair because there was a time where I'd look at like Wally West's hair and I'd try to get my hair cut like that. I would take the comic book into the barber and said, I want this wave on my hair. So Wally West, speaking of Wally West, is one of the characters that we get introduced here with the New Teen Titans issue number one.
Yep.
Is he in both in the preview as well, or just in New Teen Titans?
He is in the preview. He shows up kind of like the rest of them, just kind of out of nowhere. Robin is still like pretty disoriented because he's being pulled around in time by this this unknown force, which I believe it was Raven that was doing it to him.
Yes.
Or it may have been the this kind of blob monster creature that escapes from Star Labs because they were trying to open up a portal or a hole between universes. Maybe that was even a little bit of a tease for Crisis on Infinite Earths to come, since this did come out in 80 and Crisis was about 6 years later. But that aside, getting into the actual first issue of all this, what was it about that issue that just that hooked you whenever you read it, whenever you decided to go back and read all of that? What was it that really got Todd Weber into these characters from issue number one?
You know, I'll probably say that the combination of established sidekick characters, which was what the Teen Titans were when I was growing up in the comics that I would see, you had all these legacy slash sidekick characters, Wonder Girl, Kid Flash, Robin, Aqualad, who you don't see in this current issue, but he does show up later in the run here and there. Characters like the Frances Cain Batgirl, I think it's Frances Cain or Betty Cain Batgirl, and the Golden Eagle. So you had kind of derivatives of Hawkman and Batgirl and Batwoman there. And the Joker's daughter. There's just a lot of random Bronze Age stuff going on with the Teen Titans. So I had kind of a connection to them in the 70s, even though I hadn't read a ton of them. I was aware of them even before books like Who's Who. I think the thing was you had a balance of personalities, and that's what got me was the characterization from the get-go. I related to Garfield Logan, Changeling, who was wisecracking, legitimately funny, but also sensitive and kind of a fragile ego. So that was the character who hooked me as a teenager or 10-year-old, I think, when I started reading these, preteen. And then it was fun to follow the journey of Robin because he definitely grows up and develops in the New Teen Titans series more than he had been allowed to even in the Batman and Detective Comics series of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Well, this started the 80s.
Yeah, and boy, does Robin develop, because George Perez really has a thing for drawing him with the like most muscular arms and chest I think I've ever seen any artist draw Robin.
Yeah, he's kind of bulky Robin, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't look that way whenever he's in his tights and everything, but when there's a scene of him in issue one walking around shirtless, and it's like, wow, he's drawing Robin is like really jacked. But as I was saying about Robin's costume, he actually does have the most unfortunate like leotard style costume of everyone in this issue, because I mean, when you look around at someone like Donna Troy, Cyborg's costume that I absolutely, I kind of like really dig it, even as a late 70s, it feels like a 70s throwback costume, but it's still pretty awesome,
like Deathlock or something like that. You know, asymmetry and symmetry at the same time.
Yeah, it really does have a Deathlock thing going on. I think the updates to Cyborg's costume later are definitely better. And of course, that classic Kid Flash costume that Wally West is running around in. I still really dig that. Interesting that he's portrayed here with brown hair instead of red. I was used to him as a redhead. This is different for me.
I grew up with him as a redhead, but, you know, digital coloring, you never especially know. And maybe they're just trying to differentiate his hair color from Starfire's, as hers is presented as a little bit more red here. But yeah, I definitely remember on later runs of this, you know, in the 20s and 30s, that his hair was definitely presented as red. And it was red in Crisis on Infinite Earths, too. Same artist.
Sure.
So, like Greg and Nick were saying on the latest HTF, there were problems with conversions to digital, and that's just the way things go. You know, sometimes they don't have all the archives quite right. Sometimes they're recoloring these. There's a lot going on. I know Ben can talk about more about the issues involved with converting these things to digital.
Sure. And you make a good point about the way Perez drew hair, especially when it comes to Starfire, whose hair kind of becomes a character in and of itself. Like, it's such an integral part of her that you couldn't imagine her being like portrayed any other way, or at least I can't. It almost feels like it's, you know, her version of like a cape or something. If you were going to have a caped hero or another caped hero on this team, that's how her hair kind of looks and interacts with the rest of the crew here. But getting into that first issue, no longer are we doing the whole like non-linear storytelling. One's pretty straightforward. And you still got Raven coming in to try and put a new Titan together, as she's warning Robin about this like incoming threat. But apparently she's been warning all the other like Titans as well, or the upcoming Titans like Donna Troy, Changeling, Wally West, and given a background Cyborg, who's maybe the one character in this that gets a little short shrift. But there's a big tease for him to get an actual like, proper origin later. But what do you think about introducing his character in this way in issue one, where he's already Cyborg? We're just kind of dropped in on his, like a moment in his life, and it's like, okay, how did this happen to you? How did you become this thing?
Well, this is not a double-sized issue or extra size. This is a very standard 22-page, 21-page, whatever it is, comic. And we had a little bit of time devoted to Cyborg in the DC Comics Presents issue with Silas Stone and Star Labs. So, you know, we are hopefully, you know, as readers, like saying, okay, I'm going to stick around and get more information on Cyborg. I feel like they were only allowed to tell that story if the comic was a success. And boy, was this a success, bringing these new characters of Cyborg, Raven, and Starfire together with the established Titans team. It caught on pretty darn quickly with DC fans. And, you know, the book became bigger and bigger, and people were talking about it, and it was a nice counterpart to Marvel's X-Men. I don't think this book would have necessarily existed in a world without Marvel's X-Men being a big hit in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, probably not. And it's still impressive, though, that they could take a bunch of mostly, like, I guess we can just call them sidekick characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And something that DC has, you know, had a long history of, but they never really pushed their kicks to be any more than that. They were always just going to be the kids, you know, standing next to the real like giants, the real superheroes. And a book like this comes along and it's so vastly different. And it gives the sidekicks a chance to stand out front and to really be those like lead characters, like to develop into leading men. And we will certainly see that with characters like Dick Grayson, like Wally West, I think Donna Troy as well. And of course, Cyborg, who, you know, as we all know, finally got graduated up to the big leagues most recently. So, what do you think it is that really helped this iteration of the Teen Titans become such a success? Because there had been a Teen Titans book before,
yes,
and I really appreciated that they kept a lot of these like relationships intact, like Robin and Kid Flash had known Robin, Kid Flash, and Donna had known each other long before they had been on a Teen Titans team, and they're just kind of picking up where they left off. So, what is it that that you think made this iteration of the Teen Titans like the definitive one?
Well, the easy answer for me is George Perez. I think any other artist other than George Perez draws this, and it's not necessarily the success that it becomes. Perez was peaking in the early to mid 80s. And Titans was just right there. And a lot of the younger readership would identify with these characters. I didn't necessarily identify with Robin, but boy, did I identify with Nightwing when he said, I'm breaking out. You know, that happened in eighth grade for me when was coming into his own. Yeah. So that true talk. That's not even a joke. That's when we got Nightwing was in my eighth grade. It was actually seventh grade. And then I got the eighth grade one where eighth grade was where I got the reprint issue to show people, hey, this is the Nightwing costume. And I just remember it very vividly, very clearly. So easy answer is George Perez. Secondary answers are you had diverse characters. Everybody could kind of find one character to relate to. Plus, you had mysteries. Raven was a mysterious character. Donna Troy, even in her recapped origin, is still kind of vague. Cyborg's origin is not necessarily there. You had humor in the book with Changeling. So I think there was a little bit of something for everyone, and it was a nice counterpart to Justice League. This book probably started out a little better than Justice League was at the actual time this came out. You know, Justice League was probably in about issue 205 or so when New Teen Titans came out. So it's a nice counterpart to the Justice League 200 issue episode we did when DC Universe came out. DC Unlimited. Mm-hmm. No, DC Universe. I said it right. that's the thing with MCU, which is Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then MU, Marvel Unlimited. Now we have DC Universe, but it syncs up with Marvel Unlimited. It's hard for me to keep. There's always a U.
Yeah. And it's all over the place.
DC for you, right? This is not DCU for you.
Yeah, this is DC for you. We're telling people, you know, why we like these issues, like what hit with us. And I'm right there with you on this first issue. It hooked me in a way that other issues of its type probably haven't in the past. And a lot of it is based on exactly what you said. The individual characters are so great. Their interactions with each other are pretty tremendous, especially anytime Changeling is featured in there, because he's trying so desperately to get people to call him Changeling instead of Beast Boy.
Yep.
And they're just not picking up what he's putting down. He keeps pushing the issue, but it just doesn't happen for him. You know, poor kid. And I mean, the only thing that might just feel a little like weird or very Bronze Age is the whole like random alien invasion thing that happens.
Gordanians, whatever they are.
Pretty
basic Bronze Age, Silver Age lizard people.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they look like, you know, the precursors or, well, no, the I guess the parademons would have been around by now. That all would have been introduced in Jack Kirby's Fourth World.
I think these guys are specifically here because of the Starfire plot. They are leading into and tying into like the Omega Men and the Tamaranians. I think that's it. Tamaranians, Starfire's people, and how one race subjugates the other. So there's a reason why they're not necessarily parademons, but boy, that would be more interesting necessarily. But it still works because you just need a clear bad guy that you don't want to spend too much time on development or motivation when you're introducing so many characters.
It's true. And there are a ton of them still being introduced, and characters that you don't even realize are being introduced in this issue until much later. But this issue does actually act as a pretty good origin for Starfire. So if somebody were to be like really curious about her character and want to know, you know, where do I start reading about Starfire? New Teen Titans number one's got you covered. You can just pick up there, and it'll give you a really good cross section of who and why of Starfire. But I do like how, as the issue like comes to a close, we're kind of treated to this idea that the Teen Titans have already run afoul of a new villain who's going to come into their purview pretty soon, with the tease of today, the Terminator being the tease for issue two. So those who are fans of Deathstroke or like that character know that his issue will be the one that comes after this. And that's that was a big hook for me, along with the whole mystery around Raven about why she brought this team together. And, you know, almost like making me wonder, did she manipulate these situations into bringing this team together somehow, some way?
Yeah. Is there a specific reason she chose these individuals, their powers and their personalities?
Yeah, exactly. Like it's a good hook. It's a really good hook for this issue, and certainly is going to have me back reading more of it. And I am reasonably sure that we're going to be talking about some more issues of New Teen Titans in future episodes.
Absolutely. And wait, you said the I think it's kind of interesting that at the point that issue 2 came out, the character in question is called the Terminator. And I suppose we'll talk about that much, much later and much more in detail. But
yeah,
but I just expect somebody to show up out of the blue, naked, saying, "Your clothes, give them to me. Are you Sarah Connor? Are you Sarah Connor?" So,
Sarah Connor.
Are yes. You? Are you Donna Troy?
We'll get into some Donna Troy discussions down the road, I'm sure, because there's talk about a bit of character convolution that's going to be happening.
Oh my goodness! Yes.
Yeah, but that is a topic for another time, because we could go on and on and on about that one. But we appreciate you guys listening to DC4U. This has been Todd and I talking about New Teen Titans number 1, and of course the group's introduction in DC Comics Presents issue 26. You can check out both of them right now on the DC Universe app. Would very much encourage you to do it, because these were both tremendous reads. And for me, as a first time reader, I absolutely loved them. Todd, I'm assuming they held up for you, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, this is one of those triple dip comics. It's a comic that I had in a regular issue. I own New Teen Titans 1. I went back and got it when it wasn't too expensive. I actually have the most valuable comic in this run, New Teen Titans number 2, Introducing the Terminator. I own that one too, but I went back and bought these in trade, omnibus, and now I have them digitally too, although I'm streaming them. So it's just that good. It's stuff you want to have. You want to have your permanent collection. You want to be able to go back and read, and especially see the great George Perez art throughout this.
Absolutely. George Perez is just a master tactician, master storyteller when it comes to all of these DC characters. And we hope everybody will go and check out these books. We hope you've been encouraged to check out this and others that we've mentioned here. But with that said, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time on DC4U.
DC4U.
Place to Be Nation, it's your manager, Todd Weber, bringing you the latest and greatest here on Place to Be Nation Pop and Place to Be Nation Wrestling. Over on the Pop feed of podcasts, in the latest Talkin' Pop episode, Jenny and Tim interview each other. They share summer's memories in a rare non-guest episode. We also had the 7th installment of Laughing Theater featuring Miranda Burkhold and Andy. They were watching Men in Black, the original from 1997. Hard-traveling fanboys kicked off X-Men month with their edition of Countdown. They ran down their ranking of the first 11 films in the X-Men cinematic universe. Pop Goes the Movies with Scott Criscolo, J. Arsenio D'Amato reviewed Rocket Man. NBA Team Podcast has Gone Fishing, lots of it, 3 and 4, talking about the Eastern Conference. Sonny Groove is also back, speaking of Elton John. David Sunday talks about Elton John and Chris Cornell. We are also starting up the Greatest Songs of the 80s Tournament, like our PTBN Greatest Songs of the 80s Tournament on Facebook to participate. This week at Wrestling, we had a new episode of Wrestling Warzone. JT and Chad dove into Raw Nitro from January 15th, 1996. Good Lord, that was a long time ago.
Latest episode of Making Towns with Friends featured Steve Williams talking about being a trainee wrestler with OVW. After 6 months off, Peter Winston and Steve Bennett reunited and discussed their favorite 10 single-season sports teams of all time on the Adams Division podcast. In the eighth episode of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zaney continues his road trip diaries in an interview with Mikey Blanton. They discussed Black Label Pro Wrestling. Latest episode of Main Event featured Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Willie recapping Super Showdown from Saudi Arabia, NJPW Dominion. No, they didn't talk Dominion. My bad. Classic match picks on the latest edition of the aforementioned Main Event. Check out all those shows. Go to placetobenation.com. Like us on Facebook. Like Place to Be Nation Comics on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to DC for You.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. The Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. We dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.